This is Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I'm Bobby Temps.
I'm Danny Hogan.
Each Thursday, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. With special guests and stats you can trust, here we go. We're back for what is actually now our last lockdown interview. Including this one, we've done 16 of them, so 16 weeks. And I've so valued the opportunity to check in that these have provided, to hear from friends, past podcast guests, future guests, all about their experience during lockdown. And so I'm delighted to be joined for this one by Julia Bainbridge in what makes for a uplifting, positive close to this mini-series.
Well, I actually think that we're more than satisfied. I have been, I think they've been amazing. 15 bonus eps. It's been brilliant, actually, hasn't it? We found it different to start with because it's different to our normal structure and format. But it's been a really good way to just get a quick insight of and getting a little bit more from our guests about actually what they've gone through throughout the pandemic in a short, sharp way. And they've been able to, you know, actually relax into that and talk about them and just how their experience is, as opposed to normally people come on and speak about a more specific experience to do with mental health. I think it's definitely been brilliant, worth doing. I've really enjoyed it. I can't believe this is the last one.
Yeah, it is sad, but we had to finish it eventually. And as lockdown is ending more and more, and hopefully will stay that way, sort of felt like it was the right time. But no, I'm very pleased to have done them. And it's definitely added that important human element to so many of the things we've discussed, particularly when we did our 12 episodes covering the pandemic on Thursdays. Being something that's evolved so quickly, you can kind of miss that. Like, it's one thing to have the statistics and the news articles and all the political stuff going on, and another thing to have the human perspective of, okay, this is how this has affected individual people. So I'm so grateful to all the guests for being involved, particularly those that are repeat guests that have come back on to share an update on their life in a time their life is quite unrecognisable. And a lot of very personal stories have been shared as part of that, including with Dave Chawner, with his experience of losing someone to COVID-19 that he talked about last week.
Yeah, huge thank you. I just echo what you've said and how grateful we are, you know, especially to the frontline workers that we've had come on and speak about their experiences. We had Isabel, my friend, didn't we, join us as a nurse on the front line. That was so cool for me to hear her talk about her experiences, you know, in a different way than what I'm used to hearing. So it's been a great learning and, I guess, experience for all of us, you, me and the guests. It's been really worth doing. So well done to you, Bob, because you thought, you know what, Dan, we're going to do some bonus episodes. And it's really worked well. The listeners have really enjoyed them and, you know, it's been a really good thing. So, yeah, well done to you too.
I'm so pleased with all we've done during this time. Actually, I think it's something that we'll look back on and have that resource, that kind of time capsule of this is what the pandemic was really like. And this is how it affected people from so many walks of life in so many different ways. And that I'm really proud of. And I'm not sure whether the listeners will know this or not, but actually, out of all of the mental health podcasts that are out there, we have shared the most content in terms of number of minutes during this time. And so, yeah, you know, even from just a production angle, it's been incredible how much we've managed to get done, even whilst being trapped at home and feeling quite restless and unproductive. It's a nice reminder. No, we have actually been pretty productive.
Yeah, I mean, we've been, you know, we were given under the umbrella of essential listening, weren't we, on Apple? So that was great. And that, you know, it's credit to us all and to Pete, our producer, that, you know, is in the background listening to all the stuff that we talk about in order to produce it and edit it. And, you know, he's had hours of extra content to do and to work through. So, you know, I don't want to say it's great that it's coming to an end, but I think we can all maybe sigh slightly a bit of relief now that we can get back on track to what we usually do and our hours kind of readjust again.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure nobody will feel that change more than Pete, who, out of everyone in the world, must listen to our voices the most, with him having to go through every episode more than once.
Oh, I feel for him all the time. We've always got it in our minds, though, haven't we, Pete? We've always got it in our minds when we're gabbing away and we could talk forever and we think we need to wrap it up, we need to get it over to Pete. So we are considerate. So thank you.
Yes, thank you to Pete. So for this one then, we're wrapping up, as I mentioned, with Julia Bainbridge. She's a writer and fellow podcaster as host of The Lonely Hour, a show all about loneliness. In this bonus interview, we'll talk a little bit about her experience of the pandemic and initially adjusting to that whilst living somewhere that was for a long time the epicentre of this virus, with still one of the highest concentrations of it in the world. But even with that going on, she managed to find an incredible positive that I won't ruin the surprise of. I'll let her tell you herself. And if you really enjoy this episode, she will be back on our Thursday one as well. Just to kind of make a little bit of an event out of rounding up, we wanted to give you a double whammy of Julia, her insight, her joy, and her incredible perspective on loneliness, which will be the theme for Thursday, something that's so key during this time. I feel like I've never said during this time as many times as during this time. It's funny the things you get self-conscious of.
During this time, at this time, in the current climate.
Yeah, I need to start looking up synonyms. I mean, at least I haven't been saying unprecedented every other word, like no. We're saying a lot of. Okay, so with that all said, we'll get into the interview with Julia in a moment. But first, who's our sponsor? Let's find out.
I'm Julia Bainbridge. Lockdown has been sort of okay for me. I'm well suited to stretches of time alone, so I feel lucky in that I can handle the isolation perhaps better than extroverts, for example, for whatever reason. But I will say, as a New Yorker, I feel oddly disconnected from the rest of New York. And when I speak to friends who don't live here and they ask what it's like in the city, I can only speak to my 5-block radius. I've been pretty conservative during this time. I am nervous about all the unknown and have been trying to also operate as if I'm a carrier, so in to protect other people as well as myself. You know, I live alone. I've been here in my apartment going very quickly on errands nearby. I don't know what it's like on the Upper East Side. I don't know what it's, you know, I'm looking at the same pictures you all are of Midtown and even other parts of Brooklyn. So I feel disconnected. I also am feeling scared in the ways that we all are. But I'd say that's the first thing that comes up when you ask that question. I'm feeling disconnected from New York, from my world.
Yeah. And I would imagine, although I've only visited New York once, it's extra intense given how busy the city usually is. And one statistic I've found really interesting to track is, in terms of New York as an entire state, currently one in every 45 people has had a confirmed case of COVID-19. And so that, not just the intensity of how many people you're used to seeing, but also the virus is so prevalent there that the lockdown has had to be so harsh. So you've had that real contrast, I would imagine.
Yes, the lockdown has been so harsh. And there's also that fear because of the knowledge of how prevalent it's been here has turned into anger, you know, and there's a lot of policing of other people's behavior, fights breaking out over the lack of a mask or some kind of behavior that one side of the party, you know, believes is inappropriate. It's tense.
For you personally, being inside more, how have you found that? And do you find that you've been more lonely in this time? Or are you connecting with people and making more of an effort, perhaps?
It's starting to get to me now. I think even though, you know, for a while, New York was the epicenter and everybody was being conservative this whole time. And now that numbers are surging elsewhere in the country, there was a period of time when I allowed myself some distance walks with friends, you know, masked out in a park. And I have stopped doing that and am only in a very small 2-person bubble in terms of anyone I'm physically interacting with. I know that numbers surging in Texas and Florida don't necessarily mean they're going to surge here, but I'm just trying to operate as a member of a nation instead of maybe a particular area, which I wish our leadership was. But yeah, also, you know, Governor Cuomo has asked that anybody traveling into New York from those states quarantine for 2 weeks. And I know full well that people are not observing that request, because it's a request, not necessarily a mandate. I mean, how do you police that, right? So yeah. It is now getting to me that I have been on my own for, you know, quite a while. I'm getting sick of the concrete, especially now that it's hot. And so I'm going outside even less. So shorter walks in the park. I am itching to get out to the countryside somewhere, perhaps go visit my father in Maryland, who, you know, lives in the countryside there and has some land. I'm feeling that need less so for interactions with other people and more with all of those other friendships we have with the sky and the grass. And I'm really, yeah, I don't know. It's just some kind of primal need in me that it's saying nature, but I don't know how the logistics of that would work, right? I'm certainly not getting on the train. I guess I could rent a car if I sanitize it. So I'm trying to figure out how exactly that will happen. But then how is anyone doing anything right now? When can I really ensure that if I go visit my father and we interact, I'm not bringing him something? If I had gotten tested, you know, a week before, I don't know how to make it work. My default has been to just stick here. And it's starting to get to me, but I feel capable of staying the course.
Well, that's it. There is no easy answer. Like, there is no how to do lockdown right. And some people seem to take that as a mandate to not bother, and other people do their very best, as it sounds you are.
I'm very lucky in that I have an apartment. I feel actually lucky that I live alone. I really feel for friends of mine who have children, my brothers who have children, who they're having to manage in addition to having, you know, full-time jobs that everyone's doing from home. I've never been so happy to be childless in my life. And I'm financially secure, I mean, for the next little while at least. So for me, it's been a time to wonder what I might improve upon. It's been a time to reflect on how I had been living before this and wonder how I might do better. I think a lot of people are reprioritizing. What were we in this rat race for? What's the point? I'm having a lot of those kinds of thoughts and conversations with friends when I do, quote unquote, see them, whether it's through a screen or a mask.
And yet with all these changes in your life, one thing you have been continuing to do is to try and date. Is that right?
Well, I wasn't trying necessarily. So I'm 37 and I think, you know, I've had some loves in my life, but I got to a point where it's been a bit hard to find partnership in these past few years, which is something I determined that I want after exploring whether or not I even believed in that and believed in monogamy and long-term monogamous partnership. And, you know, it wasn't happening. And for a while in my mid-30s, I was very sort of desperate over that and very frustrated. But I got to a point just this past year or so where I thought, okay, you know, I just don't think this is happening for me. And I think that's okay. My life is pretty rich. I have the ability to do meaningful work. I have wonderful, rich friendships. And, you know, I'm pretty sure that I want to live a more rural life when I can afford to maybe buy some property. So that's a goal I'll work towards and something I'll look forward to. When I'm there, I'll tend a garden, and that's a perfectly fine life, you know? And it's that cliche, I guess, of then, so I just sort of paid lip service to that maybe within the last year, but really came around to being okay with that, truly, you know, digesting that. And then this man just arrived. And I think perhaps, so yeah, I mean, I wasn't necessarily dating, but I am now partnered and very much in love. And I think that perhaps this had an opportunity to develop so naturally and organically and become what it luckily has, because I wasn't gripping it so tight. I didn't need it. I was okay with my life as it was, you know? So I think before, when I was dating and really desperately wanting partnership, I would, you know, each person I went on a date with, I would hope, you know, would turn into the thing, you know? And I think that when you grip onto that so tightly, you run the risk of suffocating it. Even relationships that might have turned into something beautiful, you didn't give them a chance to because you were wanting so much, you know? So I didn't want anymore. And then I got, I guess.
Well, it's kind of this, I guess, not coincidence that you take off that pressure and then potentially things develop more organically anyway.
Yeah.
And so in the midst of lockdown, you got together with somebody. How did that come about?
Okay, so we work in kind of adjacent industries, and we have mutual friends, so we'd followed each other on Instagram for a while. I can't really say when the communication increased or like when I started looking more closely at what at his doings. I just know that he was gearing up to move from Austin, Texas, where he'd been living, to New York City, where I live. And in between, he would be traveling around Europe for a week, you know, gave himself a vacation, was going to, you know, dine at NoMa and some of, you know, he's a chef. So he wanted to do some kind of educational dining, if you will. And then COVID hit while he was abroad and he was stuck there for a little bit and we started talking daily. And again, the details are kind of hazy. I can't remember when it turned daily or like who was messaging who more often, but anything that I would normally document and file away in my brain somewhere because I felt the need to be strategic, right? About, you know, it just flowed in a way I haven't experienced in a long time. And eventually he made it back to the States and was at his father's house in El Paso, Texas. You know, we continued to talk and we honestly fell in love not being in person together. It's very strange. And yet it makes a certain kind of sense because, you know, this had an opportunity to accelerate in a way it wouldn't have otherwise, because if we were both working full time, certainly if he was working in a kitchen, we wouldn't have had the opportunity to talk about our hopes and dreams, our flaws, our relationships to alcohol, our mothers, our, you know, all those things that probably would have happened over the course of 6 months to a year that happened in 1 month. And we also laid that foundation for that connection without, looked at through one lens, the joy, but looked at through another, the complication of physical touch. Yeah, I think that in the past, I maybe have been quick hop into bed with people and that then confuses me about my true feelings. And in this particular case, I fell in love with this person and then really wanted to ultimately touch him to express how I felt about him. And I can't say that I have viewed sex in that way for a very long time. The happy ending to that is that he miraculously got a job in the hospitality industry in New York, has been living here for about 2 months now. We, you know, in those first 2 weeks, took distance walks. I cannot believe that we behaved so well and did not touch until we were sure that both of us had negative COVID tests after, you know, that 2 week time period. And then, you know, have been able to express our love in that way ever since. And I am done. I want to marry him. That's it. You know?
Wow. Does he know that?
Yes. No, he brought it up. I mean, that, so to me, feels a little, that's a little much. It's been what, 5-6 months? So I said we have to, you know, wait at least a year. But, you know, I've heard this happening for some other people, I think, in the same way that we were talking about the reprioritization. This thing is sort of, I don't know, cut things down to the bone. A lot of people are just saying, oh, God, I just want to be happy and, you know, let's just jump in. And that's what I've been doing.
And I think in a way it makes a lot of sense because it's such an intense experience we're all going through that if you've been through that with somebody else in this way, of course that's going to bring you together. If you can stand each other and you can stand the changes this may bring to any dynamic, then surviving it, I think, will bring you so much closer.
Well, looked at in another way, you know, it's like, are we just life rafts for each other? Do we actually love each other and we're setting up for a real, you know, long-term partnership? Or are we just unable to interact with others and we have safety in each other for this very scary time? I think what gives me confidence is that we've aired those concerns. How can I trust this? You know, just falling for someone always feel a little unsafe, even when a global pandemic isn't warping everything, you know? And I think,
yes.
Yeah. What if when we're back to a normal professional pace, you know, we find that our schedules aren't conducive to maintaining what we've built while inside this little bubble, you know? And, you know, he was like, it's possible. And I understand your fears. It's not likely, in my opinion, but why would we deny ourselves something so wonderful that happened so naturally? And I guess I'm sort of out of reasons. I told my best friend that I had fallen in love with him. I just kept, you know, doing some joy foreboding and kind of defending it and calling it nuts. And she said, I don't know, I think it would be nuts to discount what you found, you know, non-pandemic dating life, profiles and algorithms and swipes, not to mention going places with strangers, is far more strange than anything you have described with this person. You know, we go to these overly curated, overly conscious lengths for a chance at real connection, and it's nice to see when things just happen in this unexpected and disarming way. She gave me permission to lean into it, I guess. I needed someone to tell me that, and now here we are.
Wow, I love that. What a lovely positive to come out of this.
I have to say, the last thing I'll say on the note of keeping it positive, and I'm sorry, you know, we talked about sort of the tentacles before. You know, yes, this has been beautiful itself, but to see how people around me have reacted to it is also beautiful, right? So I was talking to another friend about it. She brought up the concept, that concept of joy foreboding, right? Which Brené Brown writes about in, what is it? The Power of Vulnerability. The idea is that submitting to joy is a radically dangerous act because of the overwhelming fear that nothing good lasts. So we kind of rehearse for tragedy and disappointment to desensitize ourselves to the inevitability of pain, right? So I was doing that as I was telling her about this relationship. You know, she could feel the tension between my desire to experience joy and share it with her and the protective calculation of my joy foreboding, right? Somewhere in the mix, perhaps I didn't want to risk looking foolish in the future or having to walk back the intensity of my feeling. And she did the most generous thing. She said, "I will not measure you against the things you said and shared at your most vulnerable. You are safe with me to be fully in your joy." So yeah, this has brought out beautiful, pure, kind of down to the bone aspects of other relationships, you know, and in the moment even, and to offer that she loves me and she loves this love I'm developing, like, what a gift. I'm welling up a little bit just talking about it. It's such a beautiful, what a gift that friend is, you know?
Definitely. And I think that's quite universal at the moment, that we're just so delighted to see something good. You know, that's definitely been part of my experience throughout this. One thing that's been massive here is we had a army veteran who has just last week been knighted for all the money he raised for the NHS to support it through this time by walking laps of his garden ahead of his 100th birthday. And, you know, it's something so pure and beautiful about that act of altruism that maybe at a different time might have gone unnoticed. Whereas right now, it really seemed to bring the country together, that we could all get behind this cause and donate a little bit and celebrate what this represents. You know, beyond Sir Tom, it's the power of human connection. It's the power of us caring about each other. And that is greater than the virus.
Right.
Any way to be reminded of that right now is very welcomed.
Well, so right, we've been given this peculiar opportunity to witness those kinds of things. What will we choose to carry with us back into quote-unquote normal life should that happen, right? That we have found some ways in which we want to better live during this time and can apply them to our lives moving forward. Does that make sense?
100%. So we will wrap up there then. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. For a list of our recommended resources, visit mentalpodcast.co.uk. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling or other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by NetSky. Links in the description. Speak to you next Thursday, and remember, you are enough.